Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, David, Jay, and Vicki will visit with Mr. Eddie Melton, Webster County farmer and first vice president of Kentucky Farm Bureau Federation. This week, we will discuss Mr. Melton's farming operation a little bit and his role with Kentucky Farm Bureau Federation. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. I hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
David, how are you this morning?
Pretty good. Got some hay done this last week and actually worked on the hay roller, I believe, more than I actually rolled hay. But I finally got it done, got it wrapped up, so I'm a lot happier now.
Is it really farming if something doesn't break down?
I always thought it was. It'd be nice if it was. I'd be okay with it.
Well, I think everybody would, but I don't know that that's realistic.
Right. Well, I feel like I worked on it longer than I actually rolled with it. But
it's funny, you know, back when I started, when I graduated college and started, you know, went to work, a farmer told me it was planting season and everything, and I was checking on him, and he said something to me I've never forgot. He said, you know, getting started is the hardest part.
Yes, that's right.
It seems like when you're trying to get started that first day,
More stuff tears up.
You think you got everything ready to go. You've worked on it. You are ready to go until you go.
Yep.
And
right.
Then,
yep. I think it's the same way with everything, no matter what you're planning on doing, a repair project around the house or construction or whatever.
Yeah.
Just getting going after you get everything together and get ready is the biggest step. So.
Yep.
Well, we've got a special guest with us today, Mr. Eddie Melton. He's a Webster County farmer and first vice president of Kentucky Farm Bureau. Mr. Melton, welcome.
It's good to be here with y'all today. So it's an exciting time in agriculture, but it's a challenging time too. So we'll talk about the issues and some of the things going on with y'all today. And
well, I'm gonna ask you something important right off the bat. How much rain did you get the other night?
Just you talking about Monday night.
Monday night,
we got about a half inch.
Okay.
So, but we've a lot of places been talking about. I know in places that it's been dry, but we've not been dry on our end of Webster County anyway. Mm-hmm. It's seems like we've had one rain after the other. There's still a lot of replanting to do. There's in fact, that's what I was doing Monday, was replanting some soybeans, and it rained me out again.
Right.
So we're going to get a chance to – hopefully we won't have to do it again, but we'll see. A half inch shouldn't bother us with that.
Well, I actually saw some Saturday when I went to – was traveling in between farms, saw some corn twisting that was probably 18 inches tall on some red – almost kind of on some red hills there down in Christian County. So we were getting a pretty dry and needing a drink, and I think we ended up getting about an inch and a half there at the house. So we got a good drink, so things should be better.
I live on one of those red hills in Christian County, and I can say just my garden, for the most part, just parts of it took off early. You know what I got in early? It got the rain, and that it hadn't received any rain. Been pretty dry, so
yep. –
I know I've talked with a lot of people, their first cut of hay was off quite a bit. Either lack of moisture or just that prolonged spring weather that we had, it didn't really grow off. Or a lot of that led to the fact that they couldn't get fertilizer on in a timely fashion. And
I think a lot of people cut early and then kind of waited, and hopefully their second cutting is going to be a little better.
Right. I've tested some, and it's good quality hay, but just a little thin on the front end. So
I've been driving around the county a little bit this week and just in traveling, and the crops, I think the crops overall look pretty good in Webster County. I hadn't been over in your part of the world as much, Eddie, but you know, I think corn is really growing, and well, beans too. I actually got my dad out this week and circled him around, letting him see all the crops this week, and I was amazed at how much growth has happened just in a week. So, but Eddie, why don't you tell us, just, you know, for our listeners, about your operation and what you all do. And I know that, but some others don't. So just tell them a little bit about your operation there in Sebree.
Well, of course, it started out with my grandfather. Actually, the farm where I live goes back to my great-great-grandfather. And my grandfather bought it from his mother at her dad's, her grandfather's from his estate. So when he passed away, My grandfather bought it from his mother and some of their heirs. So it's I've got one of the original deeds from 1900 where my great-great-grandfather actually bought part of that farm. And actually, you've got four of the five checks where my grandfather bought the farm from his mom and their estate. So it kind of makes for a neat story.
That
and
does.
But anyway, so but I wasn't going to be a farmer when I was in high school. I thought this is, we had a bunch of hogs on the farm, and I am not going to be a hog farmer. So if y'all want to talk about hog farming, and I admire the people that do it, and it's wonderful that they do it because I love bacon, but I didn't want to raise hogs the way we raised hogs. Yeah. So anyway, my dad and I came to an agreement when I got out of high school that we wouldn't be hog farmers, but we would expand our grain operation. And so we've done that over the years, and so anyway, so it's left up to me now. And then when I got this role with Kentucky Farm Bureau, I was gone more than I was home with the farm. So looking around, I found a young person, Patrick Howard, that was always wanted to farm. And he'd worked for an ag supply company for a lot of years. And so he and I came up with, he had helped me out a lot over the years. And so he and I came to agreement, and he's actually there farming with us now, and he's doing a great job. And so I'm glad to see somebody that wants to farm being able to, and it works for me too. So
and yeah, Eddie too has, he has a cattle operation too to go along with the grain operation too, and they're always good to work for. You know, we talk about extension supporters a lot of time, and encouraging folks to reach out to their extension offices if they don't already. And you know, I've had the opportunity to work with Eddie and Patrick on some things, and they're always willing to work with us. They're always willing to support. They always support Extension, and we greatly appreciate that, because we got to have folks like you. And ironically, Patrick Howard, that he's talking about, that is partners with him now, he and I had the opportunity to work together when I was back in the ag retail business.
Right,
so
yeah.
Patrick was actually my boss. So he was he was the manager, and
You know, it's great, Eddie, that you can bring somebody in that maybe didn't have the opportunity necessarily to do that and to be in farming. And because we see a lot more of that. We see people that's kids that don't necessarily want to farm. But then we found people that actually want to farm and are bringing them into that operation. So that's a great deal.
Well, it's something that it takes a lot of time and creativity, and there's got to be a lot of give and take, and there's probably more give on Patrick's part than there is on my part. Him, when I come home and think of all the things that I think they should have been doing, and they've got a different way of doing it. But I remember my grandfather was there too, so those things are. But Patrick does a great job, and you know. We all talk about that we want these young people to farm, but somebody's got to do it. You know, they just can't go out here and start it. You know, you can start a small cattle operation. There's a lot of people do that, but you can. But to get in the grain business and do it on a large scale, it's going to take some people trying to figure out some creative ways to doing it. And every situation's different.
Absolutely,
but, that's right.
But I feel really fortunate that he gets to do it, and he's doing, like I said, a great job. And we get to continue the farm on because it's been in my family for a long time, and we get to keep it going. So that's encouraging to me.
Absolutely,
that's a wonderful.
Well,
story.
I think that's the thing about farming and agriculture that. We are all drawn to is that story, though. You know, you talked about that's a neat story to tell, and it is a neat story to tell, and there's others, lots of others out there. But I think those of us that are in agriculture, we're there because of our fathers and our grandfathers and you know, keep it going back for several years. It's that story that keeps us there, and we hope to be able to push that forward. But Eddie, to do that, it takes more than farmers. Farmers are important, and they are the center of it. They are the hub. But there's a lot of people that aren't as positive about agriculture as we folks in agriculture are. And so, which leads us in to organizations, of farm organizations like Farm Bureau, that are there to be the voice of agriculture in Frankfort or in Washington or wherever that voice needs to be. And that's, you know, that's a huge part of agriculture and how we do get to continue doing what you love to do. So, you know, first of all, we appreciate the time and effort and everything that you have done with Farm Bureau. And you mentioned you're away more than you're home. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that takes, not everybody wants to do that. Not everybody can do that. And so we do appreciate those that are willing to do that. So why don't you tell us a little bit about you know, your role in Farm Bureau and kind of how you got there. And then just we could just dive into some things that Farm Bureau is working on now and how to get involved in Farm Bureau and if you're not already. So,
okay, well, so I got elected. Well, I guess I can go back to when I got home from college and a local young farmer then, Keith Taft, he was on the state Young Farmer Committee at the time, and he encouraged me to go to a young farmer conference with him in Louisville. Now, I was looking to go have a good time one weekend because I wasn't married at the time, and I was ready to go to Louisville. Well, we just call facts like they
that's
are,
right.
You know.
That's right.
When you get
that's
my
right.
age, you can kind of do right. that.
Hey, if you're around David very much, that's the way he operates. That's
so right. So anyway, so we went to Louisville for the weekend, and, of course, we did have a good time. But, you know, they put together some conferences that really sparked an interest with me. I say I've always used that term, but it really did. It encouraged me that, you know, if I was really going to farm because I'd gotten a degree, that was kind of a prerequisite of my dad's that I had to get a college education or I was going to be an employee of the farm. And knowing him, I would have been an employee of the farm and I wouldn't have been a partner with him. So he had that way of encouraging me to get to do that. So having somebody to advocate for what we do, because I understood that from the time that I was in school in Murray and even in high school, but you know, if you're going to be involved in something, you've got to have somebody that advocates for you, especially in agriculture, because we were learning even back then that there were fewer and fewer. Now, it's really come to fruition now, but back then, so I saw something there that really encouraged me and wanted to get involved, and I had an opportunity to be involved on the local level at the County Farm Bureau, and then I was asked to serve on the State Young Farmer Committee in 1987, so I'll go on and age myself here. And in 1988, I was elected as chair of that group, which put me on the state board for that 1 year. So, and if you really want to get indoctrinated with that, get on the state board as a young person and watch how this organization works and what it does. And so I was involved in it that year, and it really did encourage me that I wanted to be a part of this organization. Of course, there was a state president from our district. Bill Sprague was upcoming president at that time in the early 90s. And so I knew there wasn't a spot for me to do it. But sometimes in organizations, you as a young person, you got to be patient and wait and see what happens. So when Mr. Sprague and Billy Bob and I are really good friends, but when he decided to step down as president, there was an opening there for me to be able to run for the state board. So in 1998, I did that. And loved serving on the Farm Bureau board and being involved with all those things of the things that Farm Bureau can do for agriculture. And then in 2008, there was an opening to when Marshall Coyle stepped down as president, there was going to be an opening for second vice president. So I ran for that seat in 2008. Had a lot of good support locally. Vicky's over here laughing right now. So, but I had a lot of encouragement locally. And so I was fortunate enough to get elected to that position. And then 2 years later, Mr. John Hendricks, in fact, it was just a year and 2 or 3 months, that he got sick and passed away. So I did dual roles in 2010. Mark Haney was pretty patient with me during that time because I was still new. And, of course, not only are you an officer of the Federation, but you're also an officer of our insurance company, and we have monthly board meetings. So I was still in a learning curve with all of that too. And so, but Mark was patient with me, and he and I have served together since 2008. Feel like we've done a lot of good things for agriculture and hopefully can continue on.
Yeah. Eddie, tell us a little bit, you know, when you talk about grassroots organizations, you know, the first one that comes to my mind is Farm Bureau and getting that information from the county level to the state level for those folks to have some kind of influence on policy and those type things is, to me, Farm Bureau does that better than anybody else.
Well, in my role as first vice president, I chair the state resolutions committee, and that's kind of what it starts out. You know, there are people that are in Frankfort and Washington, D.C. and all that think there are a few people in Louisville, Kentucky that make all the decisions about what our organization does and our policies and all that. I can assure you that is not the way. It starts, in fact, it's kind of like growing a tobacco crop. You don't get finished with one until you're already starting another one.
That's right.
And that was always the way when we were growing tobacco. So usually right after we finish a legislative session or whatever, our March district meetings, we go and as we go around those, we find out topics that are important to our members on the county level. And so then we do backgrounders on those, and we will actually be bringing those out to the district meetings here the first part of July and talking to people about the topics that they thought were important at that point in time. So we'll get those out, and then we'll talk about the issues. And then at their annual meetings, those county farm bureaus will go back, and I know at our local level we'll talk about issues. And you may not think that people are paying attention at those county meetings of something that's just going on your farm, but that's when people really take and then they start developing that process that gets our policy, and then it goes to the annual meeting and is voted on there. And then it's sent to the resolutions committee, and then we spend 3 days, the first part of November. Usually there's about 1,000 topics that are sent in every year, somewhere between 900 and a little over 1,000. And we go over every one of those. Now, some of them will be in policy, although a little different iteration of it. Mm-hmm. But that committee will decide what to send on to the annual meeting, and then those voting delegates will decide what our policy is. Now, just because an issue doesn't make it through the resolutions committee doesn't mean that it can't be brought up on the floor. Yeah. And so there's always that opportunity. It's probably the most democratic way of any organization that I know of actually how the policy's set and actually starts on the county level. Now, we also have our advisory committees, which are important to us because as the president of Kentucky Farm Bureau appoints those advisory committees, try to find people that are actually knowledgeable in a subject, just like the Beef Cattle Committee. That's probably one of the most popular ones. Everybody seems to want to be on the Beef Committee. But we try to find people that are actually involved in producing cattle and what's important to them, and then they come in and they also have a chance to set policy and bring those in.
Yeah, I can think of two or three topics I'd like to talk about right now.
I bet you I can, too. It probably has to do with the cattle industry, too, I'd say, doesn't it? There's been a lot of talk about that, for sure. And if you've got the answer to it, I'd be glad to hear how we fix this issue. So
you may not want to hear the answer.
No, I think I probably know your answer, don't I?
I tell you what, too, about Farm Bureau, too, is they develop leaders, too. I mean, sure. We talk about policy and like you had just went through, and that's – and how that grassroots organization really works and how those issues get brought up. But another big part, I believe, and that I've experienced personally with Farm Bureau is the leader development. I mean, I was fortunate enough back in 2003 and 2004 to be a part of the Kentucky Farm Bureau LEAD program, which is basically an agricultural leadership program. And it was at that time it was 2 years. I think it still is.
It is.
And it's 2 years, and there's roughly I think 20 or so folks across the state, and you apply, and it's to do that, and it's kind of a lengthy process, and it is a commitment, and not only with you but your families, but I will say when I filled out that application, there was a part of me that really wanted to do that, and there was a part of me that was going, do I really want to do this? Because, it is a time commitment. My kids were very little. Matter of fact, my youngest one was born during that time. But it is one of the best decisions that I ever made was going through that program. Just what I learned from a leadership standpoint, talking to the media, a different viewpoint sometimes, and just how to communicate effectively. There's a big difference between being a leader and an effective leader. And I think that Farm Bureau does a fantastic job on that, too. And I just wanted to give a shout-out to that part of Farm Bureau because sometimes folks don't know about that part.
Yeah, that LEAD program has really developed a lot of people. And actually, there's a lot of it came after me, so I didn't get a chance to do that. But we've got a lot of programs. Even the Young Farmer Committee develops that, but we've taken it a step farther now with the Generation Bridge group that we've put together. And I got to give kudos to Sharon Furches. Sharon's done an amazing job. But what we did when we turned 100 years old in 2019, we sat down and talked about, okay, let's look at what we've done the last 100 years, and that's important. But, we got to look to the future for our organization and for agriculture. And Sharon just coming into her role as second vice president, we put together a strategic committee to look at where we were and where we've been. And in all my years of Farm Bureau, and it's been a lot, as we've discussed, but that's probably the youngest group of people we ever put together on any committee in Kentucky Farm Bureau that I ever know of. And we sat down and strategically, Mark, Sharon, myself, and Drew, we all sat down and talked about how we wanted this committee to look at the strategic plan and what we wanted to do. And so, again, we put the youngest group together, and they're still meeting now. It's probably going to be winding down here at some point, but they came up with the idea, and we've always talked about it, just never did anything about it. But that group, after you finish the Young Farmer Committee, and back to what I said about not a spot for me to run for a board seat, that we lose a lot of people in that gap there. Mm-hmm. And so they get involved in other things, or they just say, hey, I'm too busy. And we actually were losing a lot of people, and everybody had talked about it. I mean, every group had always talked about it. But we finally did something about it and created this group, and Sharon and their vision of that, of the Vision 100 group, actually is what that's called, and came up with this idea. And so we're really excited about it. Now, the ages to be on a leadership role are from 36 to 49, but we're not excluding anybody from it. If anybody wants to come, they're more than welcome to. And they're actually having their conference here, I think it's July the 29th and 30th in Lexington.
Off, yeah.
And having Folds of Honor going to come in, and they're going to do a concert that night by J.D. Shelburne. He's going to come in and do a concert, and the proceeds are going to go to Folds of Honor. So we're excited about that. And and actually, Tammy White from Union County is chair of that group right now.
That's
and
awesome.
We've actually put a board seat on. So Tammy's the last year, Amanda Geisick from Shelby County was the first chair of that group. She didn't get to serve on the board because we have to, that's a bylaw amendment to change that. So she didn't get to do that, but she always was the first. But Tammy actually was the first one that sat on our board, and we're excited her for being from this part of the state and getting to lead that group.
You know, Eddie, you talked about keeping people involved, and tell us how important it is for our younger people to continue to be engaged in what's going on in agriculture, and especially with the times that we're facing right now. How important is that?
Well, I'll go back to, and it doesn't have to be Farm Bureau. I mean, there's the Soybean Association, there's the corn growers, the cattlemen, the pork producers. Even if I didn't want to be a hog farmer, I know the hog farmers are probably going to be upset with me about this, but it just wasn't for me.
Well, everybody couldn't do it.
We didn't have a finishing floor either. We did it the old-fashioned way and tried to keep them from digging everything on the farm up. So, but those organizations. Farm Bureau is kind of an umbrella organization that looks at all of it, but those specific commodity groups, they do important work too. The Horticulture Council, all those groups, I don't want to leave any out, but they're all important, and they can focus on their industry and do those things and then work with us, because we want to work with all those groups. But we need people. I mean, if you're going to, you know, if you need to be involved in the commodities that you grow, I don't care. Because you have to, first off, you'll stay more informed about what's going on in the industry, and you won't just be out here. I know working is important on the farm, and I always got criticized some from my grandfather. He thought I wanted to stay on the road all the time and didn't want to do the work, but I feel like it is important. And we definitely need younger people, because younger ideas, just like the Generation Bridge idea, it'd been talked about for a long time, but somebody's got to make it happen. And the younger group now, they will. If you ask their opinion, they will tell you. There's no doubt about it, and that's okay.
Well, if we keep doing the same thing over and over and over, there's never going to be any growth. And if you only surround yourself by the people that think exactly like you do, you're not going to ever grow either. And so, I mean, I've always felt that way, and that's, I mean, right. I think what you've said about that program, I'm excited about.
We feel like it's really. In fact, there are a lot of other states that are actually looking at our program now that want to talk. Actually, Oklahoma has actually started one. So we're really excited that it's a program that other people see as important. Yeah. And the more people we can get involved in agriculture, or even just educating the people in town, because I think that's some of the things that we fail to do, is that we get busy on the farm. And we've got so much work to do, and we talk about it, but we have to tell our story, because there are misconceptions out there of things that we do on our farms that aren't so. And if you think so, I'll invite anybody to come to my farm and see what we do, because it's important what we do. We're trying to feed and clothe and fuel the country. And so all the things that we do, we're not doing a bad thing here. So, you know,
that's exactly
and
right.
Most people do it the right way. Now, there are bad actors, but I think any farmer will tell you that if somebody is a bad actor, that we don't support that.
I think, too, that and we've talked about this before, you know, farmers are some of the most conservation, environmental-minded folks there are out there. And I think we don't tell that story. We don't present agriculture in that way like we should. But, you know, farmers particularly understand the importance of the soil and soil conservation and being environmental and being and good use of any kind of pesticide or whatever the hot topic is that we seem to get attacked on. You know, the farmers are the ones that are probably the most conservative minded and in that aspect. And I wish that there was a way that we could really get people to see that. And I'm sure there is, but it's going to take being a part of these organizations that you're talking about and really being that voice, because if not, somebody else is going to tell the story and they're not going to sell it correctly. And sadly, perception isn't reality, but the vast majority of the people out there, perception is reality. And you've got a hill to climb to convince them otherwise.
Well, I think one thing that we really have to focus on within the next year or so here is the farm bill, the upcoming farm bill. There are actually meetings going on right now talking about farm bill. But there's a change in culture about the farm bill in Washington right now. And climate smart agriculture, people talked about global warming and climate change, but I think climate smart agriculture is what. But they're going to implement a policy that we're going to have to deal with on our farms. And I'm an advocate, and we've talked about it. There are a lot of farmers, and Webster County has been one that some people that have worked there, they've done a lot of conservation practices in our county. And all of them have, but we had some folks at our NRCS office that have absolutely took conservation to the next level in our county, and a lot of counties have. But I can speak for my county, and I can tell you that there's been a lot done. It's amazing where we've been and where we are now and the things that have done. But if we set the standard next year when we develop a farm bill and all the things that everybody's done for the last 15 years, if they don't get credit for those things, and then you've got a person sitting here in 2023 that's not done one thing on their farm conservation, they're going to be able to draw a baseline there and move forward. And they're probably going to figure out all the things, they're going to get a lot of credit for the things that everybody else has done in the last 15 years. So that's one thing that I know Farm Bureau is going to be engaged in, is making sure that all the things that everybody's done with cover crops and with all the wash cobs and everything that people have put in, that we get credit for those things, and those things aren't just pushed off and say, oh, well, that was done in the last farm bill, we're going to start now. Because this climate smart agriculture and sequestering carbon kind of makes me laugh that everybody talks about that now. But, you know, that's not a new practice. It's organic matter. It's you studied that in college and everybody knows about it. But it's the new term is to call it sequestering carbon. And everybody wants to build organic matter in their soil. There's no doubt about it. So
you look at all the other positives that it gives you, water holding, nutrient holding capacity and all that. It's one of those things. You know, to break in there, I've hoped, I don't know that it'll end up this way, but if Farm Bureau is advocating for there to be some type of timeline other than the new producers taking part in these practices, if we look at past farm bills, and I'll use ARC and PLC as an example, we went back in time and picked a baseline for people to use their farm acres. And I've often hoped that this would end up the same way, that we went back 10 years, maybe went back 15 years and pulled a 3 or a 5 year history of what people were doing and use that to come forward.
That's our hope too. And we're kind of putting these things out as people develop policy ideas this year that they can use these things and actually talk about, because we want the best policy that we can have that we can support. So that's a hottest topic, I think, right now. That's probably one of the biggest issues that's going to affect us on our farm, is where we end up in that 23 farm bill.
Well, you know, we did a show with Dr. Jordan Shockley on carbon credits. And already you're seeing people that are already doing these things not getting credit for, like, cover crops and different things like
no-till.
That.
No-till. I mean, Kentucky is for no-till.
So, you know, when I asked him the question, I said, well, what if we just start disking? You know, everybody just starts disking. Then can we get credit? And he said, well, he's got to go back so many years. So hopefully folks will start to get paid for doing things they've been doing for years, conservation-wise or whatever. You know, hopefully folks will get credit for doing that.
Well, and if you don't, you know, it's going to be tied to crop insurance and all those things. I mean, that's kind of the thing that's been talked about that a lot of people don't realize. But that will be a big part of that farm bill and that conservation compliance and all those things and how that melds into it, because it's been an issue for years. Every time we have a farm bill, that conservation compliance always comes up. And
people think that's easy. All that is easy. There is nothing easy about any government program whatsoever.
Not trying to implement it on your individual farm. It sounds good when you look at it on paper, but when you bring it to your farm, there are times when you have to do things on your farm. So, but we've just got to be nimble and be able to talk about the issues and see what we've got. And I know that American Farm Bureau and Kentucky Farm Bureau will be there trying to make sure that we can at least get credit for the things that have been happening all along.
Yeah. What are some other issues, just, you know, one or two, while we got a few minutes to talk, Mr. Eddie, what are some other issues that Farm Bureau is working on legislatively?
Well, on the state level, you know, everybody's talking about fuel prices. I think when we came in here, y'all brought up fuel prices to me, wanting to know what Farm Bureau was doing about fuel prices. Well, I wish there's something we could do.
Me too. Can y'all not get it back to $2? Well,
I tell you what, I think we could.
There's a way.
We could get everybody to be a Farm Bureau member that way. There is probably a way, but anyway.
Maybe we can start that process in November. That might be a good time.
I'm going to let y'all talk about that. Remember, Kentucky Farm Bureau's nonpartisan, right? Right. We laugh and say we're highly political, but we're nonpartisan, but we are highly political. But one thing that on the state level is that gas tax has been going up. I know that the governor froze the gas tax the other day, which was a good thing to do, but we're a little late to the game on that. But we need to protect that rural road fund, rural and secondary road fund. People don't realize, but your gas tax for your car is in the 22, 23 cent range, and on diesel fuel, it's about 32 cents, the road tax. 22.2% of that goes to rural and secondary roads, and that has been a priority of Kentucky Farm Bureau as long as I've been in there, that we protect that. There are some cities out there that would like to see more money spent in their cities and take that rural road fund and bring it down, but we're going to be there. Making sure that our rural and secondary roads and bridges are taken care of, because they're as important to us in agriculture, getting our crops to market. So that's a big issue that will stay there, and we've been there for a long, long time again. Mm-hmm. One thing that we've always talked about is broadband and getting it out to our farms. There's been so much money that's been allocated, but we can't seem to get anything going to where we can get any of that money on the ground. We've got to make sure that we can get this money on the ground. I know there's a local co-op here that is actually trying to get started on some things, but it just seems like it takes time to get the wheels turning. But we're going to stay in the fight for broadband. It's so important that we can get it out to our rural communities. You know, we talk about our small counties and people coming back. Our kids don't want to come back to our communities. If we're going to get young people to come back to our communities, they're going to have access to broadband and the internet. Mm-hmm. And you know, the new work from home environment that everybody's wanting to do since COVID now, it seems to be the new thing. So if everybody's going to be working from home, we're going to have broadband. And you know, we sit here and we laugh about it, but it's a reality now. I tell you what, when people are applying for jobs now, the first thing they want to know, it's an issue with our insurance company. When people call in and are wanting to come to that state office in Louisville and work, one of their first questions they ask is, do you have a work from home policy? Yep. And we're slowly developing something, but it's challenging to get the work done. And Farm Bureau is a group that always we feel like our culture is that we meet with each other and work together, and it's a change in culture, but times change, and mm-hmm. so this one will come in, but I think a lot of COVID brought that in and the pandemic, mm-hmm. and so, but it is a reality out yeah. there of people wanting to work from home.
Yeah, before COVID, you never heard of anybody much working from home, but I mean, it's pretty common now to talk to people that do work from home, and I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but I think you're right about one thing, is that our culture is changing, and we've got to change with it a little bit, but we've still got to keep those things in front of us that are important for us.
Right. Well, and I'll throw this out there about the broadband issue. Certainly the pandemic brought that to the forefront as far as our needs. We had a lot of people, you know, that couldn't go to work that were having to shop from home and get stuff delivered and whatnot, and broadband was important to that. I think about the growth of home-based businesses and people who have second careers that they run out of a garage and things like that. Broadband's very, very important for those folks, and we're only going to see more things like that, you know, side hustles, as they call them, to keep on growing. We're only going to see more and more entrepreneurial-type activities like that, and broadband would certainly help to further
yeah.
that.
Yeah, and if I had to keep on paying over $5 for diesel fuel, I'm going to have to get a side hustle.
Well, you farm. That's already your
side. And I'm afraid that I'm going to have to get a side hustle pretty quick.
That's right.
See you driving a Prius. That'd be funny now, seeing you drive a little car around the farm.
Well, so you know, probably not going to happen.
You put a bumper hitch on it like I've got on my little Honda.
Yeah, I could.
I think, you know, talking about the culture change and working from home and you know, that being part of our culture. And like you said, and a lot of folks are kind of looking in that direction and wanting to be able to do that. But I think, in my opinion, and for what it's worth, not much probably, but in that culture that we're going into, I believe it's even more important for folks to get involved in whatever organization that is, like Eddie mentioned, if it's beef cattle you're in, get involved with your Cattlemen's Association. If it's, you know, if it's grain crops, then look at your small grains and your corn growers, or look at just local organizations. If you don't want to be at the state level, there's ways to get involved through your extension office leadership, through the extension councils, the program councils. There's a lot of ways to be able to get involved, because if we're not careful, we'll become a society that doesn't know how to communicate with other people. And whether we work from home or whether we work in an office, you have got to be able to communicate to do any kind of business.
Or the cab of a truck or a combine. You know, people need that communication when they're out. We've actually found, and that's one of the reasons we started this podcast, is we'd be able to reach people where they need the information, not necessarily, you know, whether they're able to come into a meeting on a Thursday night and need a barbecue sandwich. So a lot of folks can't do that. As you mentioned, they're busy and got a lot of things going on. So we always try to have a timely tip at the end of this show, and that was it right there. Our timely tip was to be involved in your state and local organizations, whether it's Farm Bureau, whether it's Cattlemen Associations, pork producers. I like bacon, too. I'm going to support those pork producers every chance I get. You know, I don't want to let this show then, though, without talking about Farm Bureau's involvement in the tornado relief that we had. Being here in Hopkins County, we're a big, big benefit of a lot of work. The Disaster Relief Fund was immense statewide. I saw firsthand what it did here in this county. I want to thank you. I want to thank Farm Bureau for that. We had a partnership between UK and sure Farm did. Bureau and KDA, and my two counterparts here helped me quite a bit in the distribution of supplies, and we made it work. Yeah. We were able to get a lot of stuff out to a lot of folks, and I wanted to thank you for that. And if there's anything you want to touch on as far as Farm Bureau's role in that, we'd be glad to have you do it.
I'll be quick about it, but that relief fund was amazing. That was probably one of the largest storms that ever came through Kentucky, and the loss of life was just the morning. I couldn't be more proud of our company, our insurance company. The morning after it happened at 10 o'clock, everybody in the state, we have an all-in approach as we settle claims now. And we were and technology has allowed us to be able to do that thing, but we had everybody across the state, all the claims office, all the home office staff, all of us, Everybody was on a Zoom call at 10 o'clock next morning. Storm hit that night. Everybody's on a call. How are we getting out and taking care of our membership? Because that's what it is. That insurance company is a member service of our members and those people that were affected of our members. So our insurance company was out early and doing the work. But then the relief fund started, and I know, Jay, that you were a big part of it, trying to get things to people. The biggest thing that we got was probably fence chargers at the morning after is electric fence chargers. People trying to keep cattle in. And so we made some phone calls, and I have to give a shout out to, and I don't normally try to do this, but I'm going to give a shout out to a couple of companies. Southern States actually, solar fence chargers is what they needed, and reached out to them, and they had about 60 in their warehouse, and they got them coming. And factly, I think they were delivered here locally. I
got 24 of them.
And but so it was recommended that I reach out to Gallagher Fence Company. And so Jeremy lives in Muhlenberg County. Mm-hmm. Jeremy got involved in it, and he said, "Well, I knew somebody would call. I just didn't know who it would be." And so they got involved, and they actually delivered a whole pallet stuff from Gallagher here. But Jeremy made a phone call to a young man that worked for Stay Tough Wire Company, and they donated a semi-truck load of wire. Now, wire's been in short supply. If people don't know this, you can't get wire. But they pulled a whole semi-load of wire off the front of the production line, and not only did they do that, but Jeremy and they got and Stay Tough Wire Company, they have a fencing crew. And they brought that fencing crew in and did some fencing for some folks over in Muhlenberg County. I know a couple of farms. Mm-hmm. And I tell you what, if you're a gentleman that's lost about everything you have, including a couple of family members, and somebody's willing to come in and help you get set back up, that's a big deal.
Yes,
but I do want to give a shout-out to the people. $1.5 million, and we actually worked with farm supply stores between KDA and Extension and Farm Bureau, and then KCAR, the Kentucky Center for Ag and Rural Development, they helped us set up. And local dealers, local farm supply dealers, actually, we didn't want to cut them out because people are donating stuff, but those people are in business too, and some of them were affected by the storm. So farmers could go in and use that money locally and get to do that. And we think it was a win-win. It was encouragement for us to get to be a part of it. We're trying to wind it down. We're into phase two of it right now, but it's going to help some people. It's not going to make everybody whole, but at least people cared enough. And there was $1.5 million is a lot of money to get donated.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, as far as dispensing some of those donations go, you mentioned Stay Tough Fence. The day the semi rolled in here, David actually was there while we unloaded that. We split that semi between Caldwell, Hopkins, and Muhlenberg counties. We all just kindly divvied up and took what we knew our people needed. I'm going to follow up with a shout out. I'm the same way. I don't necessarily want to single any one person out because so many did so much. But Nutrien Ag, I reached out to them. They loaned me an empty building and a forklift. I sent a text to a guy that I'd never met before, told him who I was, and told him what I needed because I knew he had his building sitting there empty. And his response was, when I asked for the use of the facility, was, "Do you need a forklift too?" He didn't ask any other questions.
Go.
And it was only last week that I thought that I load out and remove the last of the donations out of that building. And these two here with us were very instrumental in helping me get a lot of that done and help dispense stuff, load and unload, you know. But it was a Herculean effort on a lot of people's part, but Farm Bureau, KDA, and Extension, the partnership they had, it just goes to show the deeper relationship that we've all had for years and how we work together.
And I think that says volumes about agriculture, because I think that's, you know, when people have health issues or whatever happens, the ag industry always steps up and helps each other out.
And you don't have to ask them, they just show up.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, and that couldn't have been any more exemplified than during that tornado. We had our donation program, but the stuff that just showed up outside of the bounds of that program was huge and very timely. We didn't have to wait for people to do something here. Yeah. People were ready to help from the beginning. So, well, we probably at that point, we're going to start wrapping it up. If y'all have anything to add? No. Mr. Melton, we want to thank you for being here today and being a part of this show. We want to thank our hosts for all the information that they've helped get out, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.